You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the only thing we're sexually aroused by is farce. As always, if you enjoy your trip here into the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. And please participate in our year-end awards voting. We've got that posted on themidside.com. You can find the link on Facebook, on Twitter. We want to hear what you think is the most farcical news story of the year. And we want you to nominate for our other categories, such as Narcissist of the Year, the Tom Brady Medal for Greatness in the Face of Doubters, the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award, the Romantic Manifestation Award. Give us your nominations. We'll vote on those and tell us what you think is the most farcical story of the year. Usually, I don't share a lot of my personal life on the show, but I wanted to start this week by sharing some text messages with my mother, because this is like how ridiculous it is when I deal with people. And I've actually resorted to now trolling my mother. So I thought you guys might find that amusing. So I get a text from her this past Wednesday. So that'll be last Wednesday when you guys hear the show. And she said, "Haven't heard from you in a while. Everything okay?" I just say, "Yes." She replies, "Okay, good." Don't hear from her anymore. So there's no continued conversation, like asking me anything about what's going on with me, what I'm doing, so on and so forth. The next day I get a text. "Jamie has invited us to spend Christmas at their house." Okay, that's all wonderful and good. So I just say, "Cool." Because what else do you say to that? It's like, okay, thank you for telling me this fact in reality that will be occurring. Cool, got it. Then she randomly replies to me, or I guess not so randomly, but replies to me, "What's with the one word answers? Did I do something wrong I'm not aware of?" You didn't do anything wrong, but you didn't give me anything to fucking reply to. So this is where I just go into troll mode and I just say no. I stop myself for a second. I go, "JK," and I say, "I didn't know what else to say to that." And then she said, "Okay." And I go, "One word, not allowed." And then it just devolves into I'm sending her bitmojis and animated GIFs of Chris Hardwick doing points from At Midnight and a dog doing a backflip. So this is what my relationship to my mother has degenerated to. I don't know what your relationships with your family are and how you guys interact with people, but that is a little brief view into my personal life. Joining us this trip via G-Chat from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Have you got any ridiculous text messages this week besides from me, Daniel?
I'm just curious if you're negging your mom.
Oh, wow. That has some weird connotations. Well, how would that be a neg? How would anything I did be a neg?
Dr. Freud approves. I just want to put that out there. I don't get weird texts. Remember, I get weird emails.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It is the holiday season, and thus Not That D. Richards has ramped up to an all-time high.
Maybe we'll do some on the Christmas episode, on our year-end special. Maybe you'll share a couple ridiculous ones.
5, 6, 10 a day.
Oh, wow.
I get lots of Christmas greetings, lots of year-end reports from various families about how they're doing. And, you know, Uncle Dave Richards, you know, we want to hear from you. It's like, oh, God, I'm not your relative.
Oh, I told you, sir, you need to start a Tumblr for that. Or we need to start a section on themidside.com. If you guys want
Tumblr?
To see that, Tumblr?
What is this, the mid-2010s?
I just want to get in on that social justice money.
It's all about the medium now. Medium, man. Start a medium. Get into the medium. Medium me.
Okay. Well, let us know. Do you guys want to see a Tumblr or a medium or a midside thread for Not That D. Richards? And then we can make Dan do more work that he's already doing.
Yeah.
Also joining us via G-Chat from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, have you taken that baby back ribs out of your mouth yet to be able to podcast?
The baby back ribs are inside me. So, yes, we are We are ready to go.
So you took them out of your mouth and put them in your ass is what you're saying. Why? Elliot's not even here. Why am I making gay jokes?
Justin, I don't eat ribs that way. That's just the way the Pope thinks, you know, we do things.
That is a great transition.
It is. Fuck, no joke. Let's just go.
Yeah, let's just see what else the Pope thinks in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Fake news is like getting sexually aroused by feces. So says God's representative on Earth. Yes.
I love the state that even papal rhetoric has reached at this point.
But wait, doesn't this mean he's admitting that he's sexually aroused?
Yes. Oh, this article gets into some depth about the Pope's obsession with getting aroused by poop.
Oh, I was just making a joke about the news of religion being fake. Therefore, it's the same thing. But okay.
Yeah, the poopiate of the masses. What a stupid pun. Do not laugh at that. That was pretty much the dumbest thing I've ever said. Yes. Here's the thing. So the Pope came out and was like pretty scientific about this. He said that coprophagia, that the news tends toward coprophagia, which is apparently the psychological name for sexual arousal by feces, and he excoriated the media for falling into this sick trap. And in fact, he said, and since people have and the trap is that people want this, so the media gives it to them. People have a tendency toward the sickness of coprophagia. A lot of damage can be done. Bad metaphor at best.
Is this even a metaphor? Let me reread this.
I don't think there's all that many people. Like, I don't meet... It's not like 7 out of 10 people from poo. Like,
what?
And so he's like, people have a tendency toward this kind of sickness, so a lot of damage can be done. It's like, okay, I certainly a lot more people are interested in fake news than are interested in shit dick. So... this is bad rhetoric and insanity, and this is the whole thing. And apparently, you get down to the end of the story, and it's like, this isn't the first time that the Pope has discussed sexual interest in excrement. In March 2013, he also apparently warned journalists that they risk becoming ill from coprophilia, and that they could be fomenting coprophagia in their readers.
What?
So, again... probably should quit bringing this up.
Am I supposed to know what these terms mean?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's into this. Like, he's done his research. Like, he's got the names down. And
the one the one scientific thing that religion recognizes, that Catholicism recognizes, is getting shit on.
This isn't even the German Pope. That was the last Pope. So
those Scheisse films.
I mean, his argument is that people are asking for fake news, and that's the equivalent of liking shit porn.
Yes.
So his argument is essentially people want to be shit on. Like, that's his argument.
Yes. And that this is like an epidemic.
Well, I think all he's saying it's like, what's funny is there's some. Like, if you take him literally without the context, like, there's some validity to the metaphor. It's just like, okay, well, this is, you're catering to people's base instincts. And if it were true that this is, like, a base instinct that's just latent in most people, that, like, oh, you do too many things wrong, suddenly, gotta have that poop. Gotta have that poop porn.
But, like, if that was something,
but it's like, you could say this about anything.
He's wrong, though. The media is not... they're not catering to people's base instincts. The media is creating fake news to drive an agenda. This whole idea of this myth that, oh, people are just doing these things for ratings and they're just doing these things for money. That's clearly, we can say now, that that is a myth the left has created to obscure their agenda. The media creates fake news to brainwash people, to delude them, to trick them. It's the same reason they create bad shows. So people aren't inspired by watching something better and they don't challenge themselves. It's the dumbing down of the masses. It's a purposeful thing. There's none of this doing it for the ratings. There's none of this doing it for the money.
Yeah, I mean, the greater context here, of course, is the conversation around fake news post-Trump election and the left losing their mind that apparently, or they're trying to claim that fake news was the reason that Trump was elected. Hillary Clinton even got in on this week, saying that fake news has real-life consequences, sort of directly referring to the shooting.
Did she try to do an anti-drug commercial? Like, I'm Hillary Clinton, and my life was destroyed by fake news.
Well, see, that's the thing. She was immediately and directly referring to the shooting that injured no one at Comet Pizza nonsense. But it was pretty clear what she was really talking about, which is the fact that she got spanked by an orange-haired idiot on the national level. So, but again, this whole fake news thing, someone pointed out today on Twitter, I think very astutely, like the same people rallying around circling the wagons against fake news are the people that got their news from Jon Stewart for 15 years. Anyone is guilty of instigating and believing and being supporters of fake news. It is the left hardcore. Some catching up to do in that regard. But all news is fake. I just want to point that out there, including this news. So,
including the news on this show, you mean?
Right, indeed.
I feel like we're kind of like Justin kind of puts it as like we're forced to talk about this stuff because it's like, well, we have to be relevant, but at the same time, we're propagating. What? I mean, this is a question for off air, but like, how do we? I was going to say strike a balance, but how do we make it right by being relevant, but then still not being just a propagator of all this crap? Because it's not that it's fake news. I don't know if the left just straight up makes up stories, but they completely focus on non-essentials. I'm saying there are very few cases of just complete, utter fabrication. Like, it's true that black men have been shot before. But the question is like, is this a statistically significant phenomenon? And like, it's worth noting that in a country of 300 million people, you could, you know, selectively decide to emphasize certain stories to the point where it looks like this certain kind of phenomena, you know, black men getting shot, is something that's a big deal and something we should focus on. There's no way to know whether it is or not based on
that's,
we can't trust the media to essentialize things properly anymore.
I get where you're going, James, and that's a completely valid way to analyze it. I take this whole fake news thing slightly differently. And it's things like maybe the media is or is not just outright making up stories. In some cases they are, but in the most cases they're not. But it's things like Time magazine cover with Obama, like the first Jewish president. Okay? Now compare that to the Time magazine cover of Donald Trump, and they put him in the exact same pose for his Person of the Year award that they put Hitler in, or that Hitler was in for the Person of the Year.
People are saying there are horns with the M in Time.
Okay, so this is what I'm talking about, where it's like, you have, and do you remember the Time Obama Person of the Year one, where he literally, they put a halo of light around his head, mm-hmm. so he looked like a Jesus figure? Talking about in regards to fake news, where the media is propagating this sort of metaphorical psychological stuff where it's like left equals salvation, destruction, and that's a horrible dichotomy to make because it's horribly incorrect, and it's one that propagates a fake news in the sense that it's completely fake culturally.
Right, and that's, you're 100% correct, and it's all about the presentation in that way. I mean, you're zeroing in on the presentation. It's all about the presentation that way. I mean, what, James, you're essentially saying is the episodes of Law & Order that are based on real-life events aren't fake news. What they do in those episodes, the news the media presents is the equivalent of that. That is what the media does. The same thing Law and Order SVU does. 100% the same thing.
And it goes both ways. I don't want to sound like we're shilling for the right here.
Because
Trump, for instance, makes a huge deal out of the Hamilton nonsense that happened at the play. Meanwhile, that same day, he settled a $25 million fraud lawsuit. Cover that, and everyone cover the Hamilton thing. That's the right's version of that.
Right, because they started doing what the left started doing. Because they were like, oh, well, that really works. Why don't we do what they do? Oh, you know, we fucking hate them, so why don't we be like them? Like, fuck you. Like, you get Trump then, okay? You get Trump. You guys got Trump. Congratulations. We got Trump. All of you. All of you who are fucking out there complaining. Your fake news got us Trump. So before you sit here, that's the thing. They've all fucking doubled down on this shit. They've doubled down on this shit that the Pope's talking about shitting on people. That's how bad this is.
James, I want to, you know, we're spending a lot of time on this story, but I wanted to get your take very quickly on what you think this really overt now attack on fake news actually means from the left. Because to me, it rings censorship and the idea that at some point we're going to have an arbiter of what is and is not fake news, and that's going to have to be the government. The left has sort of trial ballooned before the idea of having like a BBC-style news where news organizations are funded by the government and are not private companies. Do you think that that's what the left is preparing us for, that kind of attack on free speech?
That is – thank you for the leading question, Daniel. I hadn't thought of that. However, that kind of hypothesis has a lot of plausibility to it. The reason I don't immediately accept it as being plausible is simply because that sounds, at least the way you worded it, sounds a little bit too much like an actual conspiracy. Like, I mean, these sorts of mass motions, and I don't mean that to be glib against you, like, because a lot of these mass motions that we're seeing the state take towards more control, they do take on the kind of form of a conspiracy. It seems as though there must be some kind of plan for this, because all the lies and obfuscations and tricks and befuddlements, all these things that are meant to confuse people, they all go in the same direction towards, you know, tricking us into giving up more and more freedom. And so someone who kind of concludes like, oh, well, there must be some one man in charge of all of this orchestrating it, like, wrong, but I kind of get it. I don't think there's a plan for this. I think there's something the left has to somehow explain what just happened. So many of their arguments are based on just argument from intimidation and argument ad popularem. They have to adhere to some kind of like idea that the vast majority of thinking regular human beings are on their side. And if you deviate from them even a little bit, you're in the, you know, tiny basket of deplorables. So they need to, you know, they need to explain what just happened. Like, oh, well, all these people are getting fake news and they're just receiving marching orders from it. And another thing I've been hearing is all these claims that the Russians influenced this election. I put that on the same level. Now, there's people I actually respect who are repeating this stuff, like Sam Harris, and I haven't looked into it myself that much. But regardless of whether it's true or not, I think this is part of the left just having, you know, sort of a self-esteem crisis. Like, oh, we lost the election. What does that mean? It was the Russians. It was this fake news. It's anything but me. Like,
No. It's not a self-esteem crisis. I agree with everything you just said, except the self-esteem crisis. You're 100% correct about the left having to explain things. But the having to explain things is a way of getting the rhetorical upper hand again. It's a way of getting, as you said, the idea that they're normal out there again. It's very much like Foucault, Daniel, where they have to continually other their opponents and make them crazy. And what they're doing to do that is they're revealing their own tactics. This stuff about fake news and foreign governments influencing elections. Come on, we all know Hillary was bought off by foreign governments. We all know the left perpetuates fake news. All they're doing is turning around. It's a guy in a game who cheats. When if you've ever played sports growing up, there was always the guy that cheated. And then if you did it once, or even if you didn't do it and you won, they would turn around and accuse you of cheating. Because, oh, I cheat to win, so the only way you could have beaten me is if you cheated to win. And you did the same things. That's what they're doing.
You're both horribly wrong. Just kidding.
But... Yes, and! Yes, and!
Yes, and you're both horribly wrong.
Wrong and.
No. I agree with the most of what you're saying, but here's why. It's not a conspiracy, James. But
it takes on the appearance of a conspiracy because the ideology has to play out in some particular way. So it makes it look as though someone's behind it. I'm not sure
Means
this particular thing is some kind of plan, because that seems a little bit too much like an actual conspiracy.
Here's why I think it is a plan. And it's not a conspiracy. It is a plan. I don't think there's some shadowy organization, but something meta that we learned from the Podesta emails, it's that the left is insanely better at long-term strategy than the right.
Yeah.
The Podesta emails, when you go back and read like their strategy around the Republican candidates, like they identified immediately when Trump entered the race that was the candidate they wanted. And they were going to set whatever narrative it took with the media, their best friends, who they literally gave talking points to, the narrative that Trump was the candidate that needed to be elected, and they were going to do anything it took, and they did everything it took to get him to be the candidate.
Yep.
Now, it horribly backfired because they didn't take into account a lot of the Rust Belt stuff, but they planned that for months and months and months and months, and it's not a conspiracy. It's just simply that's the left's mode, and they're so much better at it than Republicans.
Right, that's completely congruent with what I was just saying. That's 100% congruent. I was just saying the rhetorical strategy they're using is part of that long-term plan. They're setting up that the other side's crazy right now, so they can then go forward with what you're saying. Oh, well, they're crazy with the fake news and the influence, so we need an arbiter to take care of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think I agree with my own outcome per se, but I think they are setting up free speech issues coming up.
Because the interesting thing about what you're saying is the one thing the left has held on to in the media is the idea that they're the fifth estate. It's the fifth, right?
The media is the fourth.
No, the fourth. Sorry, the fourth branch of government, they say. They say they're the fifth estate is something different. I'm dumb. Don't tweet at me. Don't tell me I'm dumb. I know I'm dumb. All right. No, they've held on to the idea that they're the fourth branch of government, that they keep the government in check by having the freedom of the press. So I don't know how the members of the media would react if the left tried to create like a cabinet position for like the media, like the cabinet member who's in charge of the secretary of the media. I don't know how they would react to that.
The Fifth Estate was a movie about Julian Assange. Anyway.
No, it's from something else, too. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of The Fifth Column, which is something else, too. Sorry. Too many fucking numbers in your political things, people.
It all becomes a catch-22 in the end.
Ah!
So, I'm sorry. Let me correct myself and be very specific. A Marxist... has closed, shock and awe, after it was completely unsuccessful business-wise in its Marxist collective workforce. So this was out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was kind of news, not only because it's funny, is it was a restaurant that got a ton of national publicity when it opened for being this very egalitarian restaurant. There were no bosses. There's no hierarchy. There are no managers. The workers got to choose their hours. There was going to be a living wage. Tipping was absolutely forbidden because that would, show favoritism over one person and not the other. Well, this place is completely closed down because they made no fucking money.
What was it called?
It was called Bartertown Diner. Bartertown Diner.
Okay.
Previously known. I guess now it's called the Garden Diner and Cafe. It was previously known as Bartertown Diner, which is when it became famous. The business model fucking failed. not the least of which is because they had no set hours. The employees got to decide whatever hours they wanted to work. And so on Facebook, you see all these comments like, went here at lunch, no one's here.
Really?
Why is there no one here?
Why were they open then?
They got to be open whenever the workers wanted to be open. So it was any sort of hours. It was random. People waited in line for like 40 minutes to get a friggin' sandwich. Everything was political. For instance, they offered a side of Che Guevara with every banh mi sandwich and $2 tacos. I don't even know what a side of Che Guevara is, but that was one of the things on the menu.
Shit.
That is one of that transubstantiation bull crap.
Yeah. So the restaurant would get in trouble even from its leftist fans. So, for instance, they offered a free meal to Grand Rapids police officers as a thank you for keeping their neighborhood safe. And a local socialist picketed and said that they were abrogating their core ideals by siding with, quote, fascists and supporting the, quote, nearly all white police force in this area of police violence.
Oh, man.
As one member of the community wrote, you apparently can't make payroll and your bills with Facebook and Tumblr likes. So that's hilarious. I didn't know that post Atlas Shrugged, the Starnes family opened a restaurant. But I guess that's what happened. This kind of story just makes me chuckle, not only because it's insane, but because for all the people who point at Atlas Shrugged and go, oh, that's overwritten, it couldn't happen, it's contrived. It's like, no, it literally happens all the time on the local and national level. So,
okay, I have logistical curiosities about this.
Are you considering opening a Marxist vegan restaurant?
I'm considering how they got the money to open a Marxist vegan restaurant and how I can get that money to be given to me instead. where did the funding come from and who owned it? Like, somebody, like, you can't just open a restaurant.
Yeah, there were owners. They're currently selling things. I don't see any information about who in particular owns it, but
it's not cheap to open a restaurant.
No,
not at all.
I mean, I suspect the guy had money.
You suspect what?
The guy just was independently wealthy because
I think he was a trust fund guy.
He told MLive.com that now he'll just be taking a vacation. So it doesn't matter that he lost this restaurant and all this money. He's just going to go on vacation.
Yeah, so he's a trust fund guy. That's what this is.
I don't know about trust fund, but you have to be independently wealthy to be able to open a restaurant you know is going to fucking fail. Because it violates the laws of economics.
But if he had made his own money, would he have been stupid enough to waste it on that? Do you see what I'm saying?
Maybe. Crazier fucking pizza.
And then he loses his money and his first thing is, I'm going to go on vacation? That just sounds like a trust fund, dude. Like, hey. I mean,
look at all the people who threw money at Hillary Clinton. That was wasted $1 billion right there. So
that was more productive than this restaurant.
It's more likely to pay off.
Well, if you saw it.
Like, just the historical homage that reality just produced, and by the fact that people actually had to stand in a food line to be at this restaurant, like, in a bread line, and they had to wait like 40 minutes in that bread line. Did they only sell bread, by the way, and potatoes? And like millet?
Well, what do you do if the servers show up and the cooks don't?
Many unanswered questions, by the way. Many unanswered questions. This reminds me of the slightly more successful restaurant in Venice Beach. I don't know, Justin or James, if you've ever driven by the Mao's Kitchen.
Oh, God.
Restaurant.
No. Oh, yes, I have. I walked by it. Oh, my God.
Not the most horrifically offensive name for a restaurant that you could think. Like, I asked jokingly once if their catchphrase was 300 million not served.
Oh my God, that's not even funny.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
that's funny.
Like, he literally starved millions of people to death. Mao did.
Wow.
From hand to Mao.
Yeah. But slightly less offensive is. upon themselves to rewrite "Baby, It's Cold Outside" to emphasize the importance of consent. Because nothing says the reason for the season as this. A Minnesota couple has reimagined the classic Christmas song "Baby, It's Cold Outside" for a 21st century audience to emphasize they're doing this as a joke. But they're not. They're doing it. Singers, songwriter couple said they were inspired to rework the song after bonding over a mutual dislike of the original's lyrics, which were penned in 1944. The duet features a man, this is the original, trying to persuade a woman from leaving a party despite her repeated protests. And at one point she even asks, "What's in this drink?" And the man says, "What's the sense in hurting my pride?" Trying to tell her to keep staying. And the couple flipped out and thought this was awful. "I've always had a big problem with the song." One of the couple said, "It's so aggressive and inappropriate. We started thinking of the open-ended questions that the song has. You never figure out if she gets to go home. You never figure out if there was something in her drink. It just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth." So do you guys want to hear some of the lyrics for the new version? Or have you taken a look at the lyrics for the new version?
Oh, I've heard it, but I think you should share it with the audience.
Watch out, Rodgers and Hammerstein, because these two, oh my.
And we don't give a shit, audience, that you're not consenting to hearing these lyrics. You're going to fucking hear it.
Exactly. You're going to fucking hear it.
That's right. I hope it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
That's what I always say. Right before, I'm always like, wait. I hope it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Oy vey. "And the line has been crossed." Okay. "I really can't stay. Baby, I'm fine with that. I've got to go away with that. This evening has been hoping you get home safe. So very nice. I'm glad you had a real good time." The opening. So where's my favorite line? Oh, "Should I use the front or back door?" The man replies, "Which one are you pulling towards more?" "The neighbors might think," man replies, "that you're a real nice girl." So, and then of course, "What's in this drink?" "Pomegranate LaCroix."
That's the worst
time. Pomegranate LaCroix. Okay, so I... We've really been grand. We'll have to do this again. Yes, I agree. How about the Cheesecake Factory?
What?
Yes. So real top-notch lyric writing here.
The most offensive thing about this is not just that she shuts him down and assumes he's a rapist, but then he's like, "Hey, you know, you think I'm a rapist? Let's go to the Cheesecake Factory.
Let me buy you more shit. Let me spend money on you, please.
We're bound to be talking tomorrow. Text me at your earliest convenience."
Wait, is he saying that to her?
Yes, that's what he says to her.
Go ahead, dude. That's going to work out real well for you.
And then she replies, "At least I have been getting that vibe." And then he says, "Unless I catch pneumonia and die."
Now he's dying?
So that went dark real quick. I'll be on my way. Thanks for a great night. So this is modern dating, apparently, where the woman goes, "I've got to leave," and the man falls over himself like, "Yes, please, get out the door. Jesus, I'm not a rapist, please. God, please leave."
What's terrible is, like...
all of it?
Dark side clouds everything is the thing. Like, it's just... there's so... this is absurd, but I feel like this is such a artistic, if you can even call it that, concretization of, like, the pressures I feel like I'm supposed to abide by in dating a lot of times. Like, it's... I'm not exactly sure where those pressures are coming from, but, like, and maybe they're just coming from me. But if they're just coming from me and my psyche, it's kind of like the way I was raised or the way I was, like, sort of taught to... it's like, yeah, you gotta really make sure that you don't too assertive, you know, that means you're a rapist.
Okay, yeah, so I agree with everything you just said, James. And I actually, I think there's more going on here. If I'm reading Wikipedia right now because I'm trying to find that drink line, but I can't. Yeah. But it's interesting what Wikipedia says. You know, it says it's a call and response song, but it says it's a call and response between a mouse and a wolf, and the wolf is trying to convince the mouse to stay flirtatiously because it's cold outside. And this is what it says in Wikipedia. The mouse wants to stay and enjoy herself, but feels obligated to return home, worried what family and neighbors will think if she stays. So originally the song was about female modesty, right? And this is something that feminism has rightly sought to blow up and destroy, is the idea that females have to have this false modesty where they pretend they're not interested in sex and pretend they're not having sex. And that's what this song was about, is this woman wanted to stay but is trying to pretend like she doesn't. But now they flipped it to the other extreme where guys have to pretend they're rapists and they're fighting against that and they don't really want to have sex. They really want the woman to be in complete control. So it's gone
completely modesty.
Right. Now it's male modesty, which is good. That's a great way of saying it, James. Male modesty, which is based upon the idea of men being rapists.
Yeah, it's like it's male modesty, or the female modesty is based on the idea like, oh, if you like sex, you're a whore.
Right.
And thankfully, we're starting to erode that perception. But it's going the other way. It's like if you want sex as a man, you're a rapist.
Great. That's a great. I think that sums it up.
Supposed to go the other way.
Right. That sums it up. Yeah. That's a great way of saying it right there. Bam.
All right, we're done. We don't need to do anything else. Well, broke the story. That's it. It's done.
Daniel, you have something else to say?
Well, now I feel bad about saying it, but
you're not a rapist. You're not raping this conversation. Just say it.
Let me insert myself into this conversation.
I own.
Yeah, it's not only all that what you're saying about female modesty, the original song, but it's 1940s jazz, a bit edgy. Like, it's supposed to be just, like, for the time, a tiny bit edgy. And it's this idea where they're starting to express lyrically what the culture is getting at, which is, like, that, and you see this in other movies and stuff from the culture, is, like, push and pull. Like, the sort of male and female back and forth of, like, yeah, I'm going to be the one sort of asserting myself, and the woman has to be sort of modest and pull back. But the song is playful. Hear the man and the woman sing it, if sort of detached from the lyrics, the woman is kind of being jokey a little bit about it, like, oh, you know, well, what will they say tomorrow if I stay? Like, ooh, what's in this drink? He knows what's in the fucking drink, and it's rum. It's not fucking a date rape drug, okay? This is the 40s. Like, he spiked the punch.
Right. Well, no, has no one among us ever done something and then be like, oh, well, what did I drink today? Or like, you know, someone serves you food and then you start saying ridiculous things and then you make an offhand comment like, oh, what did you put in the food? Like, has none among us ever made that joke? It's not a joke about Rohypnol. It's a joke about a hallucinogenic or like marijuana or something like that, or how alcohol affects people's moods and the way they say things. That's what it's a joke about. It's a joke pretending that you weren't really intending to say these things, but you are. Which is really telling the other person, telling the guy, oh, look how comfortable I am with you that I'm willing to say these things. That's the joke.
And by the way, it is 100% clear by the end that she stays. Like, if you're just reading the lyrics, maybe it's not 100%, but it's probably like 95%.
Yeah, but it's clear on the final recording when you hear all the moaning.
Well, the thing on the final recording is it's clear that they like each other. It's clear that they genuinely have each other. And this is just sort of like, you know, early dating push and pull. So the whole thing's blown out of proportion. This couple that rewrote the song are a bunch of fascist idiots.
But you opened another door I want to walk in, the door you just opened right now. So this push and pull you're describing is the way men and women interact a lot. The guy is, you know, jokingly aggressive in this way, and the woman is jokingly resistant in this way, and that's a way to build tension, right? And it makes sense that you would want to build tension in this way. It makes it more exciting. But by demonizing men and seeing them as rapists, and having this false male modesty that James was talking about, the guy can't be aggressive in that joking way anymore because it can potentially come off as legitimately rapey. So it destroys the dynamic between men and women.
Yes.
So if a woman jokes to you like, oh, you're making me uncomfortable, but she's not really serious about it, you have to seriously double and triple guess whether she actually means it or not and whether you're going to get yourself in trouble. It's like, one, how sure of a bet is this? And two, how worth it is this woman? Oh, well, she's only a 7, so I'm not really going to go ahead with this time. It's like you're only going to want to take a risk on like a 10, you know?
So what you're really saying is that feminism is hurting ugly chicks.
100%! 100%! No, dude, who wants to be the dude? Seriously, think about it. Who wants to be the dude who has sex with an ugly chick and then she accuses him of rape and then he can never have sex with another woman again? It's like, that's what I did that for? I just got rid of my entire sex life for Swamp Thing.
Hard-hitting issues here on the Midside. We take the stance that no one else is willing to take, which is don't fuck ugly chicks.
Don't take the excellent. Risk anyway.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's speaking more of, than it used to be.
Speaking of people you want to this holiday season, people who only want to fuck smart people created their own sexual orientation. This is a Vice article that when I read it, it was just like a little turducken, a little farce stuffed inside a another farce, a turfarsen or something.
Ooh, turfarsen. That's good. Yeah. We're using that.
Okay. So, who self-identify as sapiosexuals, or those who say intelligence is the most important sexual trait, are having a moment. But critics of the movement say it's at best pretentious and at worst discriminatory. Yeah, so... So apparently...
False dichotomy!
OkCupid expanded their pre-generated list of sexual orientations to include androgynous, asexual, questioning, genderqueer, and a whole bunch of other options, but they also included one sexual. Now, sapiosexuals are people who say that intelligence, above all else, intelligence is the thing they're attracted to. And people are freaking out about this. So, levels here. First, let's talk about the concept of sapiosexuality in general. I don't know much about this. I tried to find, it's really not as big a deal as this article makes it out to be.
Yeah.
Facebook page dedicated to it, and they have like a brain being finger banged. Which is
probably the worst thing for that brain.
Which would literally kill someone. Yeah. Yes. Also, a woman riding a book, doggy style.
Wait, but is the picture of the brain getting finger banged, is that like porn for Krang?
Oh, what a callback. Here's what I don't understand. Are sapiosexuals attracted to intelligence only? Meaning, like, a sapiosexual guy would fuck another smart guy or a smart girl? Or right, a sapiosexual woman would the same?
You're like, 100%
right.
They're
literally attracted to the intelligence?
Right. Right. Your question is 100% correct. It's the right question to ask. Because the other thing they're not going to do is they're not going to fuck an ugly person because they're a genius. It's not going to happen. It's not...
It's like, is this entire crowd like have posters of Stephen Hawking on their wall?
Right.
They're like jerking off to?
Right. It's not a thing. It's not like a real sexual orientation. Like, if your sexual orientation is like straight and you're a dude, that means you're only attracted to women. Right? That doesn't mean, like, if there's a hot guy, you're going to be attracted to the guy because you're straight. It's the same thing, you know, for every sort of sexual orientation. This is not a sexual orientation. This is a preference that they've created a term for two reasons. One, well, I would say three reasons. One, it's to make themselves feel better by having an identifier. And this is the way it's sort of pretentious in that way, right? It's like, oh, look at me. I'm attracted to intelligence. I forgot my three reasons now. But
well, you don't qualify for the sapiosexual sex.
That's what I was just going to say. Thus ensuring a sapiosexual never is attracted to me. But it's also It's a sort of like part of this female modesty thing we're talking about. It can make, you know, women seem more discriminatory. Oh, I only have sex with smart guys. Because honestly, the first time I ever saw this, and the only time I've ever seen this, is on dating apps. I've never met a person in real life who's like, I'm a sapiosexual. It's all like, the first time I saw it was on OkCupid profiles. I've seen it on Tinder first. But it's just people trying to pretend that there's something other than just a human being who's attracted to things. I find women and girls who are smart more attractive than girls who are not. That does not make me a sapiosexual. That just means that's one of my values.
Kind of makes you a pedophile that you had to say women and girls.
Because I don't know what term to use. I don't. Like, I want to say girls, but I feel like I'm 33. And if I say girls, people are going to be like, what? But like, I don't really like.
Here's the correct answer. Don't use both. Because when you say women and girls. Okay. Whoops.
Points.
I have met someone in real life who did identify as a sapiosexual.
Is it you?
And no.
Okay. I was going to make fun of you for banging fat chicks. Wait, I can't do that. I'm sorry.
So, in my experience, the people who say stuff like this, they're the same people who subscribe to IFL Science on Facebook. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like, oh my God, I'm so deep and I love science so much that I'm going to post a bunch of completely scientifically inaccurate news stories about science on my wall every day. That's how I'm going to demonstrate my love to science for everyone. They're like the Peter Keatings of science. Like, someone who says this is the Peter Keating of valuers. It's like they want to be an actual valuer who strives towards, respect for human greatness, a la, wanting to date an intelligent man or woman. But it's like, but they want to identify it. They want to like, oh yeah, we're the cool kids. Like, oh, I want to be a nerd. Like, I just want to be a nerd. Like, I want to be a nerd and I want to do none of the actual work required to have a specific value that makes me a valuer, kind of.
Right. I would even say, James, I agree with what you said, but I would even say that they just want to be seen as that. So they want to date, I see this more from women than men, so I just want to be clear about that. I don't see men going around saying, I'm a sapiosexual, blah, blah, blah. The women who do this, I think they more want to be seen as someone who's dating someone smart, but they still want to date the same people they're dating. You know, it's the kind of woman that goes to a club and meets a guy there and then is like, yeah, I'm a sapiosexual. So they want you to assume that not only are they the awesome club-going, attractive person, but they're the smart, attractive person too. It's someone trying to hit all the boxes and being impressive to everyone.
Hit all the boxes. So here's where you get a nice little farce here, which is the response to the sapiosexual thing, which wasn't quite the academic response that we gave it just now.
Right, because it's a legitimate response to say this is not a legitimate thing. Like, if the article had said that, we would have been like, good on you, and we probably wouldn't have talked about it, but yeah.
Probably not. No. It gets better, though. So people are saying that being a sapiosexual is discriminatory. Are you ready for this?
Well, it is discriminatory.
Everything is fucking discriminatory.
Right.
Just saying. Okay? Literally living is discriminatory.
Right.
So, against dead people. So, as one Tumblr user put it, sapiosexuality/romanticism, why does what the fuck? Okay.
Wait, sapiosexuality is a bunch of... Hold on. They don't mean like art romanticism, do they? They mean like being romantic. Right?
I think so. I just think they wanted to sound smart, so they put romanticism in this thing about fucking smart people. Anyway, sapiosexuality is a bunch of ableist bullshit. To intelligence, you're repulsed by disability. And in fact, BuzzFeed did a quiz titled, Are You Actually a Sapiosexual? And one of the asks readers whether they're repulsed by the idea of having sex with someone who had never gone to college or had no interest in higher education, because that normalizes the idea that it's okay to discriminate have college degrees or explicitly academic aspirations. So it's ableist, gentlemen, if you discriminate toward people who aren't smart, for people who are smart, who have college degrees, or even if not college degrees, who are intelligent. That is ableist bullshit, apparently.
There's a way in which they're correct here, and it's the thing I was joking about and what you said, that living is discriminatory. And they are right that it is discriminatory. This is something I teach when I teach students. Sometimes I teach them. I put the word discrimination on the board, and I go, is discrimination bad? And of course, the first thing they all say is, yes, it's bad. And I go, okay, well, how do you decide what you want to have for lunch? Don't you have to discriminate between those two things? And they're like, oh, wait, that word doesn't mean what we think it means. So you do discriminate, but they're portraying this discrimination in a negative sense, that you fuck what you don't hate. That's not the way fucking works. Like, you don't walk around and you go, who's the woman I hate the least in this room? Oh, congratulations, you win my dick for the night. Like,
I feel like that's not an outlandish proposal there. I feel like that might happen more than you think.
But that's the problem. So, what you just said, James, the facts that it happens more than you think is what's wrong with the dating and sexual culture in this country. Nobody can sit back and go, let me ask you this. If you go out to dinner and there's nothing you want on the menu, do you eat anyway? Or do you go, you know what, I'm going to wait until I get home and I'm going to eat because there's nothing I like here. Or I'm going to do more extreme. If you go to dinner and it's a place where everything there makes you sick because you're allergic to it, do you stay there and eat anyway? No. But sexually, people will do exactly what you just said. Oh, I really want to have sex and there's no one I'm really attracted to here, but you're the least offensive, so I'll have sex with you just because I want to have sex. That's the most backwards, retarded thing I've ever heard in my life. It's okay to not have sex if there's no one you're attracted to. That's part of being discerning and discriminating.
Self-esteem thing. Most of the time, that's just going to be self-esteem. And
I agree. It comes from the low self-esteem thing. I don't disagree.
Yeah, really what pushed this article over the edge for me in terms of wanting to discuss it was the concept of ableism, which is the discrimination towards those who are able.
Well, that's where that guy was great on Twitter, right? I owned this author on Twitter, so I went and looked him up to see like what he was saying about this article. And he literally retweeted a tweet of one of his friends who has some show coming out on television. And in the retweet, because you can quote a tweet and you retweet and say something, he literally replied, watch this show. This is one of the smartest and funniest people in Los Angeles.
Ableist!
That's what I did. I said, you just hate people who make bad stuff.
How dare you discriminate against terrible writers? That's funny.
Look, I can't kid you. Oh, look at, like, they don't. Oh, they just don't even care. They don't care.
You can't even?
Correct.
Okay.
Is all of this crap going to continue, this SJW stuff, or do you think the election of Trump is going to significantly curtail it? I've been hearing people say that. I don't buy it.
I will say this. I think it's giving people who are in the middle, let me say this. I think people in the middle are now, and like people who are apathetic or who are not as politically engaged, don't take it as, they're not as scared by it socially anymore. So it has allowed people like me to be able to be more openly critical of it. I can now say things to people and be critical of it, and they actually listen to me, whereas before they would like, I would see them get a scared look in their eyes.
It used to be, I think there's something very, very astute about that observation, which is that pre-Trump, people used to think like, oh, if you do say something against the social justice people, or you say something that's not social justice oriented, like that will be the end of your life. Yeah. That will be the end of your values, end of everything, which is why people pointed to Trump and said he can't win, because he said so many of these horrible things, and then he dominated. And I was like, oh, we don't have to take these fuckers seriously. Excellent.
Right.
Do I think that means that the social justice people are going to let this go? Hell no. I think they're going to double down on it, in fact. I think we're going to see coming out of the social justice community, in fact, to try to smash their views, literally, in some cases, into people's heads.
Agree 100% with everything you just said.
Yeah, and contra what Milo has been saying...
What, why is everyone always talking?
Even By the way, everyone's talking about Milo. Even Yaron Brook has brought up Milo. Even Yaron Brook refers to him as just Milo. Just wanted to point that out real quick.
That's
but anyway,
branding. That's his entire branding. His logo is Milo.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Working.
I mean, it fucking. I just want to know where Otis is. All this time, I heard Milo and Otis. Now, fucking Milo's famous. Where's Otis?
Yeah. Otis is a junkie. So,
okay. It's his black boyfriend.
Yeah.
So, you know, contra what Milo's been saying, I don't think this means a retreat on the part of the left. I think this is going to be a very momentary retreat, but really they don't have the presidency, they don't have the Congress, but they still have the moral high ground. Trump got elected off of this whole just basically a rejection of the field of ideas, a rejection of the field of morality, and just say like, all this confusing shit about this SJW, well, it's just ridiculous anyway. Fuck all that. Just fuck it. Just stop thinking about all that. Let's just elect this buffoon. But in the meantime, who gets the entire moral field? The left. And they get to continue just being crazy. And the people who actually make a difference, the people who are actually idealistic and want to think about these things, they don't have a diverse menu of options to choose from. It's leftism and more leftism. So
yeah,
the long game continues to go to the left.
Well, yeah, like, I think that's because a lot of the people who are kind of, as you're saying, leaving the morality to the left, I don't think they think they're leaving the morality to the left. They just think they're so immoral, and that being moral is just doing your work and staying home and not bothering anyone type deal. Like, if I take care of my house.
Yeah, I don't think they consciously think much about the field of ethics. Otherwise, you wouldn't see them gravitate towards representatives like Trump. It's just because he represents not having any real clear view. And you know, they've seen the field of ethics, and it doesn't have any... It doesn't have any helpful ideas in it whatsoever, with like the exception of the less bad Sam Harris. And I can't even think of other moralists on the left who even qualify as less bad. Like, Sam Harris is the only one I could think of. Someone who's like, okay, like, if we lived in a world where academia was just a bunch of copies of him, that would be a very, it still wouldn't be great, but it would be like, that is a much better world than we're talking about than what we have now in academia. But there is so little reason going on that side that people just say, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm interested in solving problems and actually understanding truth. That must be in the field of science or business and all of that. Morality, that's just kind of foo-foo.
Yeah.
Right, Daniel, anything to add?
No.
So the person in there mentioned romanticism, but they didn't know what they were referring to. Do you want to actually talk about romanticism?
Sand.
Yeah. Yes, yes, and. All right, let's do it then. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Quick review to start here. I was seduced by TJ Miller, so I saw Office Christmas Party.
And then he slapped you in the back of the head?
Pretty much. But
did you see that? He slapped an Uber driver for voting for Trump.
Sounds like a TJ Miller thing to do.
He was literally arrested because he slapped an Uber driver for voting for Trump. Moving on, TJ Miller.
Which is unfortunate because TJ Miller, usually you ask me questions about movies, but I'm going to ask you guys a question. Do you find TJ Miller funny?
Miller.
I missed that. What'd you say?
Could you ask that again? Because I didn't hear it.
Oh, okay. I said the same thing to you. I said, usually you guys ask me a question, But I'm going to ask you a question this time. Do you find TJ Miller funny?
Not as funny as everyone else does, apparently. I like his character on Silicon Valley sometimes. And then there are certain scenes, like the coughing scene he did, where he's trying to get news out because he's... I think that kind of stuff he's really good at, but there are some scenes that are kind of painful to watch with him. So, I don't know. Mixed.
I think he's amazing all the time. In Deadpool, he was really fucking funny. He's just... There's scenes that are painful, Daniel, but they're supposed to be painful. That character has the self-esteem problems, and we don't want to... You know, and I don't like the idea of, like, you know, hauling self-esteem problems into my comedy. I just want to fucking sit there and laugh. Like, we can deal with all that stuff in therapy, you know? Like, we got plenty of that shit. Let's just fucking laugh at something. So I don't feel like that's TJ Miller's fault. That's, you know, that's just some writing I don't really agree with in my taste.
Well, let's hear the correct answer from Justin.
Everything you guys just said is what your reactions will be to this movie.
Some of it is funny and a lot of it is painful.
For you, and then James will have the exact same reactions he just had, even with the self-esteem stuff and everything.
Yeah.
So whatever you think of TJ Miller is what you will think of this movie. This movie exists in the same sort of space as, like, the Hangover type movies, except it's a little bit better done and a little bit more intelligent than that. It does have Jason Bateman, so that's a step up from a Hangover movie. Olivia Munn is not too bad in this movie, although I wonder when she became an actress, but that's a whole different discussion. Jennifer Aniston is good. There's a great supporting cast. So there's a lot to like about this movie comedically, but it's still in the Hangover style of movie.
It's just the premise is it's an office holiday party that gets out of hand?
Well, the premise is they don't really market this, but yeah, that's the premise they're marketing because they're marketing the Hangover thing. But the real conflict is, the inciting action is, TJ Miller runs this branch of his dad's company, and his sister, played by Jennifer Aniston, is the interim CEO. And she comes in and says, I'm going to shut down this branch unless you sign this big $14 million contract by the end of 2 days. And then TJ Miller says, okay, the answer to get this guy to sign with us is to throw this awesome party because he hates our culture. So let's show him the culture is awesome. And then the whole thing just degenerates from there.
That's a terrible premise. Okay.
Well, that's a Hangover style premise.
What, James?
Is it their corporate culture or, like, the American culture that he's trying to sell them on?
It's actually critical of American corporate culture in the sense of one of the ironies of this movie is Kate McKinnon was the best part of Ghostbusters and she's the worst part of this movie. But they use her awkwardness to play the HR lady who everything can't be fun and everything has to be politically correct. And they're railing on that to a certain extent. How these people aren't really family who work in the office and they're not treated properly because everything has to be politically correct. I mean, Jamie Chung's in the movie and her entire role is like the hot chick who's not allowed to be hot because it offends people.
All right. Well, I've lost all interest in this movie now. Thank you.
TJ Miller.
Nope. Okay. Not enough.
You've kept my interest, Justin. It's okay.
Well, that's pretty much what I said when you guys told me what you thought of TJ Miller. Didn't I say that was what would happen?
Right. Yeah.
What? One for two. 50%. Still a failure.
No, my review is accurate. Let's talk about trailers.
Trailer takedown.
First trailer. This is only a 15...
Are you taking a bath?
It wasn't me. That sounded like Daniel.
Sorry, I poured something out of the sink and then I realized I wasn't on mute.
Yeah!
You're giving yourself a sponge bath while participating in the mix.
That's great, Pod.
Why do I have to be giving myself a sponge bath? I am married.
Ooh.
Your wife is very loud. If you were giving her a sponge bath, we would hear it.
That's true.
Yes. Moving on.
The first trailer here is it's only like a 15-second teaser, but I don't think we've talked about this yet on the show. So this is a teaser for the new DuckTales reboot that comes out in 2017 on Disney. But here's the thing that gave me hope about this teaser. It had the original theme song in it. Are they keeping the original theme song?
They probably will, but it'll probably, you know, it'll be updated some way. Like, I don't know, there'll be a rap, you know, verse in it somewhere.
Hey, nobody called
me. Make you happy.
Yeah, nobody called me.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the teaser, it was nothing. It was just the DuckTales logo with the some of the music and the woo!
And the money.
We didn't see any. There was money on it, which is good. The original was how much money was, you know, made a valuable thing in that compared to, you know, hating on rich people. So hopefully that part stays.
That's what I was going to ask. In today's day and age, can they do DuckTales justice, or is this just going to be like getting angry every time we watch this? Because I'm going to watch this at least in the beginning to see what it's like.
I would prepare yourself, Justin. I don't know if the culture is good enough to, you know, sustain the themes of that show anymore. I think you're going to get like a Starship Troopers sort of a deal. Because, like, you know the book Starship Troopers, right?
Very different, yeah.
It's the opposite of the frickin' movie. It's the opposite. And we may get that here. Just to prepare you. Oh, the gold coins are a good sign. They are!
Daniel?
I think it's probably going to be worse than the original. I don't know how in the modern culture do a show where the main guy is a quadrillionaire, but he's a hero.
Well, they're going to have him whatever. I would guess that whatever treasure he finds, he just donates at the end. Like Indiana Jones, like it belongs in a museum type deal, rather than keeps it for his own collection.
Yeah, I don't know. In the era of the 1%, it's going to be hard to do a show where a 0.001%er is the good guy.
Yeah. So we'll see. Let's move on to another reboot. The next trailer is the Baywatch reboot starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Zac Efron. And it looks like it's going to earn
more towards...
Going to be Pamela Anderson?
No.
Anderson's just going to be Pamela Anderson, right?
I kind of want to just filibuster you by screaming no into the microphone during this entire talk. That's
well, then you're going to be very upset with me because I am going to hug this movie.
Holy Jesus Christ. Fuck no.
I like The Rock. I like Zac Efron. And I'm sorry, that bit at the end with the you people, and he's like, you don't get to see you people, you're just tan. Like, that's fucking funny.
No.
What's even the premise of the show other than, like, there's lifeguards on the beach. Like, they exist. Like, what was the premise of the show other than that?
I mean, that's what most network television is. They're just like, why don't we do a show about hot lifeguards? Done. Like, and the drama that happened. I mean, have you seen a CW show? Like, besides the Flashverse on CW, that's what everything is. Like, Gossip Girl was like, what if we do a show about boarding school kids in New York?
This trailer looked horrible. What? The best joke was at the beginning, where the one guy said, it's up to you to save the Baywatch, you know, brand or something like that. And it was very meta. Uh-huh. Funny. And then the rest of it was schlock and nonsense. No, I don't care how much I like The Rock.
The rest of it was The Rock, right? That's what you said?
I can smell what the schlock is cooking, certainly. It was horribly written. I thought the joke at the end was trite.
Oh, it was funny.
What? White people talking about racial things? Hilarious. I've seen it. I don't want to see it anymore. I'm done. No. Not only tackle, but get a gang of three mob teenagers come over and beat the hell out of it, because fuck this.
With their vape sticks.
That's right.
All right. Next trailer.
But other than that, I have no strong feeling.
The next trailer is The War of the Planet of the Apes. And apparently...
The War of the Planet of the Apes of the... of the monkey, of the thing, and the other thing, of the other one, of the...
And apparently...
only have one of the... Only one. You only get one of the per title.
That's true. Apparently.
Nope.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say apparently or if James is going to filibuster me this time. So, apparently... All right, good. Not being filibustered.
Apparently.
That was good. I appreciate that. I wish I had come up with it. Now, apparently, on the human side, the war will be the war effort will be led by Woody Harrelson, which it just makes this movie one giant spoiler. I mean, we already know the apes take over the planet, and now we know it's because Woody Harrelson's in charge of the war. So there's no real reason to watch this, correct?
It's just a story of incompetence.
Pretty much.
Is this a sequel to The Hunger Games?
No, I think Haymitch, the drunk, would be more competent than Woody Harrelson's character in this movie.
Yeah, I wasn't ever into any of the Planet of the Apes, even the old ones. I have no feelings about this. It's just sort of like, I will not see it, but I don't know if it's going to be good or bad. I'm not invested. And there's nothing that can get me invested, so.
James?
The only thought that this triggers is the of the, and then also the time in the theater that I saw this, that I saw the preview for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and they show a scene of like a bunch of apes like running aggressively like across a bridge, like going into battle sort of, and my friend Jay-Z leans over to me in the theater and he says, "This is what they were worried about when they freed the slaves."
Jesus.
Wow, dude.
That's the only thing I remember about any of this.
The only thing I remember is casual racism. Excellent.
Way to turn the movie into a whole race metaphor. Awesome. Yes. All right. Let's talk about the last trailer. And this is probably the big trailer to talk about this week. Marvel finally released a trailer for their Spider-Man reboot, Spider-Man Homecoming. And it's not really a Spider-Man movie because there's a lot of Tony Stark.
Oh, God. They finally just got smart and said, how can we fucking sell the Spider-Man movie finally? And someone said, put Iron Man in it.
I mean, that should be their entire strategy for every Marvel movie, shouldn't it? Just put Tony Stark in it.
Yeah.
It worked for the Punisher season one that took place as a subsection of Daredevil.
It's true. It looks bad. It just looks bad. The writing is, and the acting is an atrocity other than Robert Downey Jr. And why does Spider-Man keep getting younger? Benjamin Button Man. It's ridiculous. And okay, look, I know Marvel, you kind of like this naturalism thing, or at least you're going for hyper-realism or something nonsensical, but I don't fucking understand what he says at the beginning of this trailer because they put a muffled mask sound over his voice. And he's like, "Who is it to be your Avengers? Who can tell me the Hulk?" I would not have complained if I could understand what he said. I wouldn't have said, "Wait a minute, he's wearing a mask." Like, I can understand what Tony Stark says.
So, I wasn't going to make a Snyder reference. I wasn't intending to. But people made fun of Snyder when he said, superheroes talking in costume is ridiculous, so I don't like to film that. And now Marvel has literally done what he said is ridiculous, because they're trying to be naturalistic.
Yeah, and it sounds like shit. They're going to have to do something about it, because I literally can't understand what he's saying, for the most part. And it's going to be like when Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man thing, where he had an afro on, and then suddenly it was gone under the Spider-Man mask, and they had to go back and digitally edit his hair because it threw too many people off. Same thing. Same fucking thing.
Luckily, that's probably an effect they can take off of the vocal, so it won't be...
Why can't they get this right? That's really my question about Spider-Man.
why can't they get Spider-Man right?
Well, Sam Raimi character. Did. The first Spider-Man is really, really good. Sam Raimi's original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. I love that movie.
The very first one. Yes.
I didn't really like those movies that much, but those were good. Those were solid movies. They just didn't connect with me. But like, yeah, those are real friggin' movies.
Yeah.
I remember that as being sort of the new wave of these superhero movies. I always thought like, oh, okay, there's Batman Begins, and then there's Spider-Man. Those are the movies that brought back this sort of grittier, realer, but still very romantic reboot of all these superheroes, and I was really into it, even though Spider-Man took a huge backseat to Batman for me.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of Spider-Man 2, but everything James said is correct about those first two movies. The third one was suffered from they tried to put too many villains in it, too many stories. But the first two are really good. And then obviously the Andrew Garfield one suffered from just awful writing. Awful, awful, awful writing. And now they have this.
Yeah.
Was it so much awful writing, or was it writing whose primary purpose wasn't to tell a story, but rather to insult the intelligence of the audience? I felt that that was their primary purpose. And if they had just directed all of that energy towards writing well, it would have been good. But they were mainly concerned with making me feel like I was a retarded child.
I think that was a side effect of their inability to write, because you were like, why am I watching these stupid people write things?
Okay, that was not the intended effect, is what you're saying.
No, the intended effect was to make a blockbuster movie, is what the intended effect was.
I see.
Failure!
So, is everyone tackling this movie?
Shit.
I'm not tackling it. I continue to hold out hope for Marvel movies in general. I know I'm sort of the odd man out here, but they've done enough good things that I'm just like, all right, like I liked Doctor Strange despite the, you know, the drawbacks. I liked the first Avengers movie. You know, I like these every once in a while, and it's just like I don't want to write them off. So I'm going to see this. I'm probably going to fucking hate myself at the end of it, but I just want to believe that he can get better.
This is the same thing as the sex conversation earlier. You don't have to see it, James.
I just want to believe he can get better.
Look, I mean, I understand what you're saying, that Marvel has done some good stuff. Yeah, they're called the Iron Man movies, and Marvel has gotten progressively worse since the first Avengers.
Yeah. Since they've gotten more ideological, they've gotten worse.
Well, yeah, because they had the leeway. They were established. I mean, look, this movie is everything that's wrong with Marvel. They know they made their money off of Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr., so what do? They put him in a movie, and they're trying to make Spider-Man the new big guy.
Yeah.
It's their entire strategy. So let's talk about something else. This is something I want to raise your attention with this week that came. I want to ask what you guys think of this. And this is another thing that's interesting, that what are they doing? Is this the right thing to do? Is this going to come off well? Is this going to be awful? So apparently, just like Lego, Barbie decided to do a movie. So who would you think they would cast in a Barbie movie? Like, if you were casting a Barbie movie, who would you cast?
Interesting. Scarlett Johansson would be interesting. She's a more realistic looking Barbie. Mm-hmm. Not so tall and lanky, but still beautiful and sort of stunning. Heidi Klum, if she could act, but I doubt she can.
What about Rebecca Romijn Stamos? Maybe a little on the older side this time, but she could play like the mother or like an elder statesman in the Barbie world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
James?
Who would play Ken?
What?
Who would play Ken? I don't.
We'll get there.
Ryan Reynolds.
There you go. Actually,
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, he'd have to really. Okay, maybe I do have an opinion on this.
All right. Well. Don't leave us in suspense any longer.
The reason I'm asking is, guess who they did cast? They cast Amy Schumer in the Barbie movie.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Now,
didn't we already do a story about getting excited about shit? Because this is pretty much a replay of that, in my opinion.
Well, the Hollywood Reporter article perhaps gives a little bit of hope. So this is, I'm going to read a quote from the Hollywood Reporter. It's a brand, they're referring to Barbie, that has had to address issues of self-image and race in modern times. The feature, with Schumer in the lead, will try to address those issues in a story that begins in a perfect land of Barbies, where one woman slowly awakens to the fact that she doesn't fit in. She is expelled from the idealistic land and journeys to the real world, where she discovers that being unique is an asset. So, I could potentially see them saying, this is one ideal that's decontextualized, but everybody else has their different values that they can put forward in the world.
Okay. That is the most ludicrously benevolent thing you've ever said.
Right, it's just that they're gonna package that in with an attack on beauty. Like, they all, you can't just attack beauty, you have to package in a kind of truth, like what Justin just said. Like, and they're gonna do that. It's gonna be an attack on beauty while simultaneously seeming to make a kind of point that does make sense.
Look, it's just like, just call me David Duchovny right now. I want to believe, because the fact that Amy Schumer has been cast in a Barbie movie and they're gonna attack beauty, like, I don't know. I just can't. I can't accept that. I just don't want.
Have you seen lately? I mean, we don't. We did the fucking story on the Barbie of the fat model. Like,
have you ever heard a podcast on the Midside where they talk about, like, how, you know, are, you know, destroying everything good?
Yeah. It's like you don't even listen to this show, Justin. Jesus.
I know. No, it's not that. It's just that, like, I fucking hate Amy Schumer, like, a lot.
Because breaking thing, news, like, breaking it, news, being cast as Ken, Danny DeVito. Yes.
Jesus. Yeah. All right. I mean, I could continue to rant about Amy Schumer, but I will spare the audience this time. Audience, if you want to hear me rant about Amy Schumer, tell me and I will do it on Snapchat.
Here's the equally offensive thing about Amy Schumer, to rant for one more second, is that the literal plastic Barbie doll has a better personality than Amy Schumer.
Done.
Amy Schumer is a shrew, okay? And I cannot stand to watch her on anything because of her shrewiness.
Right, and this is the thing I was going to rant about, but I'll just say it very plainly. She goes out of the way to play up her unattractiveness as part of her gimmick. She makes herself appear more unattractive than she actually is as part of her gimmick. All right, let's talk about other shrews in Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, and this is a shower thought. A job where you can leave when the job is done is much more satisfying than working an 8-hour shift.
And the false dichotomy.
Oh, sorry. Interesting.
Okay, well, you can say that in a second. Can I say the reason I included this?
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I included this is I think what this is a response to is something I rant about. We actually have a Marxist interpretation of work in this country, and we value work not based on the value it creates, but the amount of time you put into it. So it's, oh, if you work 40 hours, then you're a worthwhile employee. Not, hey, what do you present to us value-wise?
Yes, agreed. Don't disagree with you there. I think, and to their point, many employers think that's more important that you be there for 8 hours than that than you are productive for 8 hours.
Right,
and
that's part of what I'm saying.
Healthy thing, but I actually think that for many people that I know who ascribe to this, not you, Justin, but many, especially in the nonprofit world, which is the sort of general realm where I work, this would literally be just an excuse for them to not work. Because they're really already not working 8 hours a day, but it's not that they're, you know, getting their job done. It's just that there's no sort of incentive for them to be successful and productive, so therefore they're not. So I sort of see this from both angles, which is some weeks I work 80, 90, 100 hours. I don't necessarily think the more that I work, the better I am, you know, as a human being or the more whatever, but those are productive hours. And some weeks I work 30 hours and those are productive hours, whatever. The point is I'm willing to put in the hours, and I think many people who
just want to work less and be paid the same.
I mean, this is the problem, right? This is how the Marxist idea takes hold. Is there are people who, if you don't have the 40-hour work week, will take advantage of that and work 10 hours and say, oh, well, I was productive. Look at the value I created. And that's just their excuse to be lazy. So we create a system of rules to curtail these people and control these people, but then it becomes a philosophy for everyone and we all suffer and it makes things worse.
Yeah. Indeed.
I don't know how deeply the person who wrote this shower thought was thinking. Like when I just
absorbed.
Yeah, like I mean, yeah, I absorb this as a shower thought. It's just like, yeah, whenever I have a set goal, like a set objective goal, like, and you get it done and then you're done and you don't have to keep coming into work and pretending to do something, like that's always been a more satisfying job for me as opposed to just this continuous thing. It's just been straightforwardly true in my life, this general observation.
Go ahead.
Look, this is a Corolla thing, okay? Like, I understand wanting to be satisfied with your job, and you should. You should want to have a feeling of satisfaction for having a job well done. That to me is not the same thing as being satisfied with your job. So some people's jobs is attaching plastic wheels to miniature cars that four-year-olds drive around in the bathtub. Okay? And it's not like, you know, you can do that for 4 hours and be like, ah, yes, I feel fully satisfied with the number of miniature wheels I've attached to a car. It's like the point is you are supposed to be there for X number of hours and attach as many tiny wheels as you can. And you should be satisfied with the fact that you can do that well. But that doesn't mean that your job per se needs to bring you satisfaction. It could be that you get an even greater sense of productivity and satisfaction from doing whatever it is you do after work.
Well, that's the problem that Adam doesn't talk about when, like, he talks about it, is the people who don't feel satisfied at work and are complaining about it, it's because they don't have anything else to go home to.
It's about living an integrated life, but you know, it's, I don't know. I'm sympathetic to his sort of complaint that we're all a bunch of sort of snowflakes now that need satisfaction everywhere we go. And it's like, sometimes your job sucks and you have to do it because you need money, or sometimes your job sucks and you get satisfaction from having done something well, but maybe not that particular job.
Yeah, like, no, I agree with that premise of what he's saying. But I'm saying that integrates into the idea that it's this, the whole culture of people lacking self-esteem. So they can't look at it objectively and put it in the context of their entire life because they don't have self-esteem otherwise. So they already hate themselves. So of course they hate doing something that is to serve a purpose for something else. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Just wanted to get that out there.
Yeah, no, it's great. Those are great comments. I think all your comments were great, and that's why I wanted to talk about this. And I look forward to likewise great comments about the next question, the next Reddit, because I think this question is one that's important in our society, and it's important because I think these terms are equivocated on a lot. So someone asks, how do you differentiate when a person is confident or arrogant? And they mean differentiate between.
So, I mean, there are a couple of ways to think about this. I'm thinking about this from someone, an external perspective. So basically looking at someone, deciding if their actions are arrogant actions or confident actions, or their rhetoric is arrogant rhetoric or confident rhetoric. And I'm not, for the purpose of this hypothetical, I'm not inside that person's head. I don't know what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I can figure out how to answer this without psychologizing. And my answer is basically looking at what they have actually accomplished in reality. So someone who talks about, you know, something they've done and they did it well and they're really happy that they did it, like, some, most of the time, if it's genuine confidence, one, their rhetoric will be a slightly more measured than it will be grandiose. But two, you can actually look and say, yeah, wow, that guy did accomplish that amazing thing. He does have a right to brag about how well he did or she did. Versus arrogance, which is usually more braggadocious, more over the top, more grandiose. And then two, you look around and you go, well, what did they actually do? Did they accomplish something? Because if they did, I don't know what it is. It's unavailable to my eyes.
I think that's exactly the way to do it, is you look at what you basically are saying, the lining up of the reality with what they're saying, right? If someone brags about being smart all the time and then they talk and they sound like a fucking retard, well, then they're arrogant and they're not confident.
I.e. Donald Trump in his Chris Wallace interview today saying he doesn't get intelligence briefings every day because, quote, I'm a smart guy.
Right. No, you know, no smart person would ever say that. Because any smart person would know you need the intelligence briefing every day.
I'm a smart guy. I get him when I need him. Oh, what a fucking retard. Okay.
That's a perfect example of evidence. So yeah, it's just, does reality line up with what they're saying and how they're acting?
I mean, from a personal standpoint, arrogance versus confidence is a different issue, and I don't really know if we want to get into it or not, but...
Go ahead. What do you want to say?
I mean, I can tell someone, it's like, a lot of times it's like, what's their motive for talking about this thing? Is it because they're just really into it, or is it that is it somehow motivated by you there being in the room? Like, I was going airsofting with these guys, and this one last weekend, and this one Marine, like, I mentioned that I had a physics degree, and then, like, he couldn't shut up about all this engineering type stuff he does to his airsoft gun. And then I realized, like, oh, this guy's kind of full of shit. So I started asking him just questions like, oh, did you get an engineering degree? Like, oh, do you know fluid dynamics? Because that's important for airsoft BBs. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And then, like, 20 minutes later, it's like, okay, well, he didn't get a college degree. And it's just like, and then all these inconsistencies spring up. And, like, I didn't point them out, but I kind of did ask enough questions to confirm that they were there. Because it's like, oh, well, like, is this guy just saying all this shit to, like, impress me? Because I, like, mentioned I had a physics degree, like, early in the conversation. And it turned out, yeah, that's probably what happened. It was really, like, actually a downer because, like, I kind of like that guy. Like, but now it's just like, it was really a downer to hear him do that.
Well, he can still be a douche and you can like things about him. You just know he's a douche. I mean, that happens.
It was kind of a deal breaker level of douche.
Deal breaker douche. That's the worst kind of douche.
Do you want to, very quickly, Daniel, you're talking about on the personal level. What are you referring to with the arrogance versus confidence?
I mean, like, one of the things that I had to learn early on is that there's, I mean, aside from, you know, my mam, no one's going to really be out there being my advocate.
Yeah.
I have to be my own advocate for the things that I accomplish and the things that I do, especially if I want to be particularly successful. And I think that's a general principle that applies to most successful people. And in fact, a lot of the braggadociousness, as annoying as it is, not that I'm braggadocious, I'll get back to me in a second, is, you know, the sort of personal momentum thing that, again, Krulla talks about, like Trump. I think a lot of Trump's success is because Trump is literally just out there tooting his own horn all the fucking time. And there's something that moves people, what it is, but there is something about that. But just sort of going back to a rational version of that, like, understanding what you have actually accomplished and being able to explain that to people is not arrogant. Even though you may, that's, I dealt with that for a long time thinking that was arrogant to talk about yourself. As long as you're not lying or misrepresenting or saying something that you can't actually do, but saying you can do it, like, that's all a part of being the best salesman of you. And that's incredibly important to be successful in business or in relationships or basically in anything where you're interacting with other human beings.
Well said. Any final thoughts, James? Are you good?
I'm good.
All right. Last Reddit. And I love this one because I rant about this shit all the time. I don't understand this shit, and maybe James can explain it or Daniel can explain it, but if you woke up and life turned into an MMO with stats, skill trees, and such, what would be the first thing you did? Isn't life an MMO? Like, I don't understand this shit. I had a roommate, right? And I got Grand Theft, this is when I was in grad school at Clemson. I got Grand Theft Auto, and he was playing it. And he would have his character go to the gym in Grand Theft Auto to get stronger. And then he would get money in Grand Theft Auto and buy his character nicer clothes. Now, I recognize there's an element of that happening quicker in the game than in reality. But why not just go to the gym and up your strength stats and then make money and up your aesthetic stats? Like, isn't life an MMO? What's the difference? Someone tell me.
Well, Justin, I'm not a space wizard.
Thank you for clarifying, James.
I mean, not yet anyway.
You're fired. I only had you on the show because I thought you were a space wizard.
The game Destiny lets you be a space wizard. Or maybe, like, you know, maybe you just wanted to be a gangster, you know? Like, I don't want to be a gangster. I don't want to actually be a gangster, but it'd be cool to, or maybe I want to be a
cowboy. But I heard that, damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Yeah, hilarious.
There's Red Dead Redemption, where you get to be a cowboy, and I don't want to be a cowboy in real life, but I want to be a cowboy for a couple hours at a time, you know?
No, I'm not denigrating the. I wasn't denigrating the purpose of playing video games. Like, I understand that.
But to the point to your question is, like, you can treat life like an MMO already. Because basically, you know, if you want to get intelligence points, you go out and read a fucking book.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
I feel like I'm going to get a little too technical with this, but I feel like the mindset of treating life like an MMO actually has hurt me sometimes, because a lot of times I treat goals in life like it's the bad guy's health bar that I just have to reduce to zero. Like, okay, if I just do enough math problems, then I'll be good at math. And then, you know, I just sit down like, 3 hours of math. Like, and now that means, you know, the health bar is down to 60%. Like, it's just... just not how it works in real life. It gives you.
Well, that goes back to the first Reddit about the time input, right? Yeah, in the video game, it's the time you put in, right? That gets you better. But there's a quality in life that you have to put in as well.
Yeah, that a game can't replicate that sense of novelty and nuance you have to produce to do actual work in real life.
And using the gym metaphor that I was just using with my roommate at Clemson. People go to the gym and they spend a lot of time at the gym. Or the thing I love is I'll be there for an entire hour long workout, and a guy will be on the same machine the entire time I'm in the hour long workout. It's not how much time you spend on the machine; it's doing the exercise right and setting up your routine in a correct way that you get the improvement. But they think it's if I just spend more time on this machine, I will get bigger muscles and get stronger.
Yeah.
Really easy to slip into that mentality.
Yeah, which, by the way, my answer was, you know, if there was going to be something unique about the world, you know, having been turned into an MMO, I'm immediately going to the fucking app store and buying like a jillion extra lives.
That's true.
Yeah, so.
But in a way, hopefully they're trying to get us to do that if they get immortality going.
The singularity.
All right. So let's put a cap on this episode. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that the things that stand out most in James's mind is casual racism. Which is...
Welcome to the midst.
Yeah. Also, Justin's a pedophile. Hey! What did you learn, James? Sorry.
James?
I learned that the Pope, apparently he's, can't get his mind off of shit.
If there is a hell, we are going to it. I'm just saying.
Yeah. You know, am I the only kid who every time I heard the word the Pope, I'm just like, oh, obviously I'm calling him the poop. Obviously we have to call him the poop. We're never calling him by his actual title. He's the poop.
I think you don't just say you're the only one, but I didn't think that.
All right.
Justin, did you learn something?
Yeah, I learned that apparently when a woman wants to leave and it's cold outside, I can't get her to stay by any other means than hiding her jacket.
Even that's a microaggression. So.
But she doesn't know it's a microaggression because she doesn't know I hit it. She just thinks she lost it, so it's okay.
Indeed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, and Zay, if you learned something this week, why don't you go ahead and tell us on the Twitters @TheMidSide, facebook.com/TheMidSide. We're also on Instagram. and Snapchats. I did my first Snapchat recently, by the way. Like, I actually sent a photo. That was the first time I ever did that.
I didn't get this.
It felt weird. It was at the our big conference that I was attending, and I someone snapped me, and then I replied with an actual photo, which is first time I ever used it. It was so liberating, knowing that they would only have 24 hours to read that message before I'd have to tell them what it said.
Wait, what are you talking about? It doesn't work that way.
I don't know if fucking Snapchat works.
Well, clearly you didn't send your dick, so you have no idea how Snapchat works.
All I'm saying is it sucks and we should stop using it. So anyway, follow us on Snapchat at The Midside, which is midside.com/podcast, where you can go and listen to all the old episodes of The Midside. You can go back and listen to your favorites from this year and tell some of your favorite news stories, which means you can go to facebook.com and click on the little voting mechanism thing that we've set up and vote for your favorite stories of the year and some other things that Justin mentioned at the top of the show, which I won't repeat.
You don't know what they
are. What else can you do? Oh, subscribe. I have no idea what they are. You can subscribe on iTunes. Get this little ditty here delivered to your personal device every week automatically. We get a little notification. We're also on Google Play, which is cool. Liberty.me also, what's the word, syndicates us, which is awesome. Love libertarians. And, of course.
Patreon.
Patreon. Especially, it's that time of year, ladies and gents. You want to get The Midside a Christmas present? Go ahead and subscribe on Patreon.com. Patreon.com/TheMidside, if you're unfamiliar, is a system where you can go and subscribe to give us money every time we produce a piece of content. It's not back of it. If we take the whole month of January off, which I may very well be, if we take the whole month off, we don't get any of our money. We get money, and whatever amount you choose, by the way, $1, $5, $10, a penny, whatever it is, only when we produce content. And that's why I think Patreon is one of the best funding content that exists out there, because it's solely dependent on what we produce and the value that you get from this thing. So go to patreon.com/TheMidSide and subscribe. Our Patreon subscribers are awesome. The funds help us keep the lights on.
Those lights, guys, it's Christmas. I have way more lights than I usually do. Keep giving money. I can keep these lights on.
Lights equals more Patreon.
I'm sitting here in my underwear because of how hot it is with all these lights on. Keep that going.
Exactly. If you want to see James's underwear, that's a Patreon subscribe right there.
I was going to say, apparently James's Christmas tree is causing global warming.
Single-handedly. And but speaking of iTunes quickly, we're up to like 18 five-star reviews.
Oh, we got more?
That's
awesome.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insanely awesome. Yeah. So you can go to iTunes, leave us a five-star review. Yet if you write, this show is shit, no one should ever listen to us, just click that five stars. Just click the five-star button. That's all we ask. You can write anything you want. That helps us. And tell a friend, tell a foe. Like faux listening. We don't have enough foes listening, really.
Yeah.
We need more foes.
What about people you're just generally neutral towards? You're just like, yeah, he's a interesting person.
Tell everyone.
Yeah, so friend, foe, indifferent neighbor, whoever. We want them listening. Especially gather them around the fireplace this holiday season. Put on a nice edition of The Midside. Sip some Cabernet or butter beer. Justin texted me a picture of him drinking a whole stein of beer, and I almost fucking swallowed my tongue. And I was like, oh, it's butter beer. Wow, okay, excellent. My whole worldview was going to go to hell there for a second.
I'm a wizard, Harry.
Anyway, friend, tell a friend, and we're out. We love you, tell a friend. Bye.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
pause momentarily. James, your mic is getting progressively worse.
Yeah, it's like you're not talking directly into it.
It used to be that one out of every 40 words sounded like you were in a fish tank. Now it's one out of every 1.5 words.
All right, hold on. How's that?
Nope.